Hey guys, coming up on today's Sports Spectrum show, our friend Mark Herzlich returns, ESPN college football analyst. He was undrafted in 2011 after spending his time at Boston College, where he was an All-American in 2008 and then missed the 2009 season due to a rare bone cancer diagnosis. Was undrafted but signed by the New York Giants, played seven seasons with the Giants and won a Super Bowl in his rookie year, Super Bowl 46. Mark Herzlich does great work with ESPN. He also does great work with IJM, the International Justice Mission, where he is a team freedom director in helping to combat human trafficking and sexual slavery with kids and with women. He does great work with IJM. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about his recent trip hanging out with a former U.S. president. It's Mark Herzlich coming up in just a second here on Sports Spectrum. First, I want to remind you about our Sports Spectrum magazine. You can subscribe right now at sportsspectrum.com and get 15% off a one-year subscription. That is exclusive. That's an exclusive deal for podcast listeners only. You can put in the code podcast15 when you check out online at our website, sportsspectrum.com. Podcast15 and save 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. If you're looking for sports content that is faith-filled, that is clean, that's perfect for kids, it makes a great gift, please consider subscribing to our Sports Spectrum magazine. And our current edition with Kirk Cousins on the cover is available now, the fall 2023 edition of the Sports Spectrum magazine. You can subscribe today over at sportsspectrum.com. It's always great on Sports Spectrum when we can bring a guest back on the show, and he is Mark Herzlich. He's with ESPN, college football analyst. You see his games every Saturday during the season, presumably Saturday, Mark, on ACC Network. Sometimes there's college football on other days, but he's also with IJM. He's a team freedom director, of course, former NFL linebacker with the Giants, Super Bowl champion, ESPY winner, pickleball fiend. Like, you're all into pickleball right now, man. Is that what's going on right now with you?
I mean, you know, pickleball is one of those sports that I can do with my wife, which makes it more accessible.
True.
We get a babysitter during the day. Day dates. Day dates are big.
Yes.
You do it while you don't have to get an extra babysitter at night, and we go out and play some pickleball. It's good.
Did you just play pickleball recently at Fenway?
I did. It was like this past summer. Fenway, I don't even know which, they partnered with some pickleball organization where they took the warning track at Fenway and they put down plywood and then these like expandable pickleball courts on top of it.
Yeah.
It was the coolest thing. Wow. I mean, I was like out there right by the Green Monster. I actually hit a terrible shot off of the Green Monster.
Okay.
In pickleball. So,
you take the terrible shot at that moment because it's off the Green Monster.
Well, that's exactly right. So I hit a ball off the Green Monster. I don't need to define that it was pickleball or baseball. I mean, it was pickleball. But I hit a ball off the Green Monster. That's good.
Pretty cool experience. Where does that rank in the echelon of sports experiences for Mark Herzlich? You've had a lot of pretty cool ones. I mean, you played in the Super Bowl, so that's not fair.
It's down there. I mean, it was cool, but, you know, there's been other things that have been a little bit cooler.
Yeah. Well, okay, so give me a couple cool things. Maybe outside of, like, everybody would say Super Bowl, of course.
So a lot of the things around the Super Bowl, right? Like, so after you win the Super Bowl in New York City, right, like, went to sit courtside at a Knicks game. Like, that was cool.
Yes.
Like, you know, you'll go backstage and, like, there's all these, you know, actors and, like, these fans. I'm like, this is kind of neat. And then, so that was really cool. I think anytime like I get to go and see these events, like I got to sit like ringside at a boxing event, at like Foxwoods. And like, that was so cool. Like, you're so close to this action of this sport that like, I just, you know, only see on TV. Like, I don't go to boxing, but like hearing the punches and the sweat fly, like, it was brutal, but it was a really cool thing too.
Yeah, so you get it's what comes with the territory of having success, if you will.
Yeah,
I put that in air quotes, of winning a Super Bowl. You've had a lot of cool things lately. We talked about pickleball and Fenway. Just following you on social media, you know, I love you and Danielle, and kind of watching your guys' adventures a little bit. And all of a sudden, I see you posing in a picture with the former president George W. Bush, and I'm like, all right, Mark, what's that story? How does that come about?
So this is, it's a pretty cool story. And it's all, you know, again, being a part of different foundations and stuff, like this was a connection through Jonathan Stewart. So Jonathan Stewart, running back for the Carolina Panthers for a long time. He finished his career with the New York Giants while I played with him. And so his wife, Natalie Stewart, her father, so Natalie Stewart's father, worked on George Bush, 43, the son's under his what do they call it? Not on his campaign, but in his
administration.
There you go. Thank you. In administration.
Yeah.
So he wrote a lot of legal policy for him, and so George's niece and Natalie became really close friends because they grew up together. So Natalie has been going to Kenny Bunkport, to the Bush compound, for years, and they have a golf tournament up there to raise money for a local hospital. And we live up in New England, and Natalie was like, hey, would you guys like, last year, she said, would you guys like to come up? And I was like, to Kenny Bunkport, to the Bush compound? Like, I definitely want to come up.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, you go there, and you're like, oh, well, you know, obviously we're not going to see him or anything like that. And we're out there, we get there, and they have this ritual where when you get there, you got to jump in the ocean. Like, they live right on the ocean, and so we go in, and it gets cold. I mean, it's Maine. You jump in the water, it's fun, whatever. And then we're sitting by the pool, and all of a sudden, just, you know, George comes out and is just, hey, what's going on? And hanging out by the pool. And then we had a golf tournament, and afterwards, they also, he has two pickleball courts side by side.
Oh, boy.
At the Bush compound. And in the middle, this is how, I mean, just so casual and great the experience was. There, the pickleball courts, we could finish playing pickleball. So they set up folding, like, you know, those Lifetime plastic tables you get at Costco?
Yeah.
They set those up in a line, and then they had like a homemade, where they made it themselves. My wife and Natalie and a couple of the girls made Mexican food, and it was all in like tin foil and, you know, some beer in a bucket. And George, you know, they came out, and it was like, all right, we're just going to have dinner.
And with the president.
Yeah, with the president. With and the so like, president. And so this is what I did, though. So like, I was a little bit tactful on where you sit, right? Anytime you go to a dinner party, especially at a long table, not a round table, you got to be like, I need to sit in the right location, right? Mm. Because like, if you get stuck at the wrong end and you're talking to the people, you're like, this is going to be a boring conversation. Yes. I'm going to hate this dinner. So I was like, okay, where is George going to sit, right? I'm totally being that guy of like, I want to sit near him because like maybe I'll have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
So I'd see like, okay, what is he drinking? So he had like a beer bottle and he puts the beer bottle on the table and goes, gets his food. I said, that's it. I know where he's going to sit. So I go and put mine right next to his, right? And I go, Danielle, you go sit over there.
Genius.
So we go get the food, come sit down like, oh, look at this. We happen to be sitting next to each other. And just, you know, just talking to him and, you know, told him a little bit about my story. I started working for International Justice Mission, and it was fun because I, you know, told him about that. And I think the best part of the evening was Danielle. So Danielle loves him, like absolutely thinks he's like the best president of all time. And you know, forget about whatever political reason you have. But she is ex-military. So Danielle was in the Army for 10 years. She joined the Army because of him. She said, this guy is the guy who I would go to battle for. And she got to tell him that. And it was so cool. Like, that was a really cool experience. And he was asking about her experience in the military as a female.
Mm-hmm.
And she was being completely honest with him about different highs, different lows about that. He was being very receptive. Then football, like, he loves football, especially Texas football. So we were talking back and forth. And it was just, you know, that... It's funny, I didn't come to the top of my mind, but that probably, if you consider me playing in a scramble charity golf tournament, a sports memory, that would be towards the top.
It's got to be.
that was pretty cool.
You're hanging out and talking. Most people get to shake hands and spend 2 minutes, and you're having dinner.
Yeah.
You know, with one of the presidents of the United States. There's only, you know, 46 of them or whatever there is now. It's just incredible. Now you got to do it a second time. So that what you were describing was 2022, right?
So that was 2022. 2023, got to go back again. And
same experience,
no pickleball. It did rain.
Okay.
We got to hang out. So every morning George will take he's got dogs, and so he'll take the dogs to this local beach, and they'll go do a morning dog walk at like 6 a.m. So we went out there with him for that, and like hung out and, you know, just, you know, walked. And the first year I got a new nickname because of him. So, so he started calling me, and you know, if you're listening to this just on audio, you won't necessarily see me, but I have a mohawk.
Yes, which I'm about to ask you about in a second. Yep, but keep going.
Well, he started calling me the Hawk.
The Hawk,
and I was, you know, just it touched my heart in a way that was it was everlasting.
That's
so
pretty awesome.
So I was the Hawk, and yeah, he called me the Hawk again this year. So you know.
Now, I just have questions, like, as a being around a former president, he's at his compound and everything, but he's still, even though he's been out, you know, for a long time, 2008, I think, was when Obama took over. Mm-hmm. He still has Secret Service everywhere, right? Yeah.
So
that's just kind of how that works. So he's going to walk for a dog, and you're hanging out with him. There's still always a couple guys, you know, hanging around, making sure everything's okay, right?
Yes. So, you know, the Bush compound, it's not like a hidden thing. Like, if you go to Kenny Bunkport, you can do a drive by the Bush compound. Yeah. They do, you know, that type of stuff. But, you know, you go down the road into the gates, and there's Secret Service at the gates.
Right.
We had to, you know, just like stop for like a few minutes because they were doing a drone flyover. There was a drone that was flying over, like presumably taking pictures. Nothing really serious. Yeah. However, the Secret Service were extremely focused on this drone and were like, yeah, it was like when Secret Service is there, you don't necessarily notice them that much until there's a drone in the air.
And so then there's reason to.
Okay, there's a lot of Secret Service here.
Yes,
And they were great. You know,
Did you have to go through security yourself and all that too, going into a compound?
You got to get a background check. Like, yeah. You know, you got to give them your name and different stuff, and then they'll do it. And then once you get that done, you're on file for there. So,
sure.
It was wild, but you know. When he's there, you know, him and Laura, they're there, and they're just being aunts and uncles and grandpa. It's family time,
yeah.
Which is cool.
That's really cool. I want to stay on that topic for one second because you got to go, I assume, to the White House and meet Obama when you won the Super Bowl. So compound that with that experience. What was that like? You know, again, you're not hanging out with him and having dinner with him, but you still get a pretty cool experience.
No, that was really cool. And, you know, growing up in the Northeast, outside of Philadelphia, we did like a Washington, D.C. field trip when we were younger. And
sure.
you go and you kind of see the White House, and you go through that like kind of generic thing. It's just, and like, it's cool. And I have this appreciation for I have appreciation for history, but I also have an appreciation for like understanding different power dynamics, right? Like that's where arguably one of the most powerful people in the world lives, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it's just really interesting. Anytime I'm around someone who's like the best at what they do, right? Like where, you know, you're an Olympic gold medalist. Like it fascinates me. When you go see one of these performances, like you go see like a Carrie Underwood show or something, and you're like, she's the best at that. And I'm watching the best at it do the thing that they're best at.
Yeah.
That was cool. So like being in that building and just be like, this is one of the most powerful people, has the most such an important job. And then being able to you know, to shake his hand and and go up on stage. And this was after my rookie year. So I'm like, you know, like, I'm like, what is
a
happening?
A whirlwind,
like,
right?
You know, this is crazy. And so it was really cool. But I think it was, you know, more special, obviously, to be kind of around George and Laura, and to be there in a way that felt, you know, very much like I was getting a peek inside of their family.
Yeah, and understanding that, first of all, your whole sports journey is something that it's very unique, right? Most people would be like, man, I'd love to experience that and don't get to. But then something like that is even further along in the experiences that people will ever get to have.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm at these conferences with you and some others, and there's a lot of athletes, and I consider myself privileged just to be around this because who am I? And maybe you even look at it like that too. Like, who am I that I could be hanging out with George and Laura Bush and having dinner with them? But I don't know what that does for your faith, but I would imagine it gives you a lot of gratitude and appreciation to God for these blessings that you get to have.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is it's more of, you know, when you spend, you know, I think anytime you spend time with a celebrity that I guess understands themselves pretty well, you get this sense of you're just a normal person. You know, like, you mean like you're not normal and you're special, right? But like, you can conduct yourself in a way that you make me feel like I'm welcome in this area, where before you get there, you have all these you know, these ideas, these worries or these thoughts of like, oh my gosh, like what's it going to be like? And then you get to the, you get there and you interact with, like we do here, you know, we do on Sports Spectrum,
yeah.
When you get to talk to people, when I get to see people at conferences.
Different athletes, like, other people from sport, from different sports.
It's like, you're just regular guy, just regular girl.
Regular people.
And you're special, but you haven't let that affect your heart journey or your spiritual journey or your relationship journey with, like, everybody else.
Yeah, that's good. We're talking to Mark Kurzlik here on Sports Spectrum. One of the great things that you do, you're wearing the sweatshirt with IJM, International Justice Mission. You're a team freedom director. Mm-hmm. You just got back from a trip.
Yep.
And I'd love to hear about the experience of that trip overseas and just kind of some of the work that you've been doing recently with IJM and maybe even what God's been showing you with the work that you've been doing.
Yeah, for sure. After my playing career ended, I went through that transition period like every athlete does when they're, you know, leaving their sport and trying to figure out, okay, how can I do something that will provide for my family, but also be fulfilling? Maybe in the way that my sport fulfilled me, but a lot of times it's in a more, at least for me, it was in a more big picture way of like, you know, football matters. In our little circle in America, for a certain number of people in America. But, like, how can you be a part of something that's really, really matters? I was introduced to International Justice Mission and their work against work fighting slavery and human trafficking while I was a player, and a job opportunity opened up to be the director of Team Freedom, which Team Freedom is our network of pro athletes that donate or donate money or donate time or donate their celebrity to help raise awareness that there is human trafficking out there and also raise money to fund these operations to rescue children out of the human trafficking. So I was given that opportunity to interview for that job and I got that job. And so now I get this blessing of being able to find out what these families truly desire. How can I give them opportunities to experience exactly what I experienced when I was looking for a job? How can I do something that's bigger than me or bigger than my little community or my little NHL bubble, my MLB bubble, my NFL? How can I do something bigger and to be able to find those particulars? And for certain families, it's, hey, I want to go and see the work firsthand. So this past summer, was able to take four families, and actually one of the families, they brought their 11-year-old daughter, which was like just such an awesome experience, and to be able to ask her questions about this. But we went to Ghana, and IJM's work in Ghana is heavily focused around trafficking of children in the labor sector. So there's a big fishing industry in Ghana. And so children are trafficked to these fishing boats, and they call them boat masters, which are basically slave masters.
Yeah.
And they put these kids on these boats at 3 a.m. as young as like 6, 7 years old. They go out in the middle of the night. They go and catch fish until the morning. Then they come back in. And then if they are lucky enough, they get to go to school. But most of them, they don't go to school. They just sit there, and then they clean the fish or they cut it, and then they sleep. And so that way, when they can wake up, they go back out and do it again. And that becomes their life. And whether they are living with a family member who farms them out to this boatmaster for like $2 a week, basically, or if they are held there by force by the boatmaster, not knowing where any family member is, those two things both happen. So we got to see some of that work. We got in the... I think the coolest part about the
trip. Where did you go again, Mark? I'm sorry.
To Ghana.
Ghana,
yep,
yes.
Into Ghana. And, you know, geographically, Ghana's on that kind of west, the west coast of Ghana, I mean, of Africa.
Right.
In that little bubble on the underneath lip of it, the old Ivory Coast area.
Sure.
And so we got to go there. We got to go to an aftercare shelter that IJM partners with, where there are about 55 kids. About half of them were come directly from those fishing villages on the boats that IJM has rescued, and we got to sit with them. And you think about the trauma and the pain of having no hope, not knowing what's going on? You're 6 years old. You can't swim. You're thrown on this boat. You're thrown in the water. Some of these kids drown and die, and they just leave them there. And watching them now, after a certain amount of time, all of them have been, some of them have been there for years, some of them have been there for days, some have been there for months, watching their development as a human being, yeah. Not only physically but spiritually, they pour into these kids with the Bible. But when we got there, they did a performance for us as a welcoming. And there was a music teacher from Venezuela who came and now stays at the shelter. His mission is to teach these kids skills in music and in musically. Mm. And they performed this, like, you know, with a cello concert and piano and violin and saxophone. And these are kids, like, I don't know if it's tough to describe, like, being there, but like everything's dirt, right? Like, it's Africa. It's dirt and it's dry and it's hot, and they're just huts made out of like mud and sticks, and that's how people just live. Mm. And these kids are in this shelter thriving. They're going to school. They're getting an education. They're competing in soccer there, and we actually tried to compete with them, and boy, are we not good at soccer. Like, you know, we had you know, three NFL players there just playing goalie because that's all we could do.
That's all you could do, right? Oh, man. When you go on a trip like that, and obviously you've been involved with IJM for a long time, since you were a player, you said, but when you go on a trip like that, what is it when you come back from that trip that God is speaking to you through? Like, when you experience something like that, and obviously your relationship with Christ is the most important thing. When you're talking to God, or when you're praying, or when you're just thinking about those experiences, what happens to you? I feel like the word transformation comes to mind every time I would imagine you go on a trip like that. But what comes to mind?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's transformative in terms of your perspective, right? Like, you can know all about it, and then you see it firsthand, and you're like, this is heavy, right? Yeah. But I think, you know, I think the biggest thing he talks to me in those moments are like, I've put you in a position to help others do something about this. And so my mind is just constantly going of like, how can I tell people about this? How can I help raise more funds so these kids have more? How can we get more kids off the lake? And so that's where my mind goes. And God is like, then, okay, let's present this at a conference. Okay, let's call up this athlete because, you know, I feel like they really have a heart for this type of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's been really cool. And I think that because there are actionable pieces of it, it feels hopeful. Whereas if I was seeing that and was like, I have no idea what organization would help with this. I have no idea what to do about this. It would feel very lonely, and I would feel very lost in that. But, you know, that's what the blessing of saying yes sometimes to these ministry partners, hey, yeah, I'll learn a little bit more. Hey, yeah, I'll do something. Hey, yeah, I'll tell some people.
Yeah, IJM.org is the website. People can definitely go there and check out all the great resources. There's even a lot of stats there. I think you were at the Super Bowl. We were there in Arizona, and you guys were right next to us. And I saw you talking to so many players, even some prospects, guys like CJ Stroud were coming through, and you're just throwing stats at them.
Yep.
And this is stats about human trafficking and what's out there with sex slavery. And it's just mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. And, you know, what we did, you know, we went and we just said, hey, look, let's ask questions. Like, let's gauge what people's kind of natural response is to, like, hey, how many people are in slavery right now in the world? Right? And you get different answers. But the answer is 50 million people.
50.
No one got close to that.
No.
I would never have gotten close to that.
Yeah.
50 million people. Then we say, hey, how much does the human trafficking industry make a year in terms of money? And people are like, oh, probably a lot. Like, I don't know, like $1 billion, like $500 million. It's $150 billion. Mm. Like, it is a major, major industry.
Unbelievable.
That is run by criminals.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you talk about, you know, the drug trafficking and all that stuff. Like, human trafficking is right up there. And as far as, like, people are making tons of money, and they're not stopping until we put them in jail. And that's the cool thing of what IJM does is like, hey, we're going to hold you accountable. We're going to rescue the kids. We're going to rescue the slaves. But we're going to hold accountable the perpetrators. And then these perpetrators, it's not like they're the most courageous people in the world. They're just doing it because it's easy money. Once you say, oh, I'm going to get arrested for that, then they stop, which is neat.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, unfortunately, you know, it's always the bottom line, right? And you think about businesses, and I'm not talking about any specific business yep. here, because I think, you know, businesses who thrive and do good things, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you're involving billions and billions of dollars, it's and you know it's wrong, it's mm-hmm. very hard to cut through that, I think, because it's billions and billions of dollars. So the mind goes to, oh, I can make this money. I don't care if it's legal or illegal.
Yep.
But that's why IJM is so important here.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think one of the interesting parts of it is it's not really even businesses that are doing it. Like you think about that much money, that money usually are going into individual people's pockets and not just like there's a guy who makes $1 billion. It's like millions and millions of people
yes.
out there that are making a little bit of money,
yeah,
right? A little bit more money that they would make in their 9-to-5 job, but it's easy and no one's going to do anything about it. And that's where IJM steps in.
Yeah, I love that. This has been a great conversation, Mark. Let's leave it with this. What's the Lord kind of showing you right now, impressing on your heart, you know, speaking to you, you know, in your relationship with him, your dad, obviously. Mm-hmm. You got three kids?
Is three that right? kids, yeah.
Like, so life is crazy, you know, all yeah. the work that you're doing.
But you mentioned it. Like, the first thing that I think the Lord is really impressing upon me, the responsibility of being a father.
Hmm.
I think that, you know, we as fathers are super lucky because we have a blueprint. Like, we have an entire book about a father who loves us the way we need to love our children and lead the way we need to lead our children and our households. And so that's been the most awesome challenge that I've had in my life. The most important thing that I do in my life is raising my children and raising them in a way that they can know God, expand his work. And I'll just leave you with this one little story.
Please.
About my oldest son, Boston. He's 5 now, but he was about 4. We moved into this new apartment. We lived in this big house in Connecticut, and the Lord put us on our hearts to sell everything we own and move into an apartment in Boston. And so we did that, and we live in a 3-family condo, and we're on the first floor. On the second floor is a little boy who is the same exact age as my son. They have the exact same birthday. Same day, May 15th, you know, 2018, they were born the same exact day.
Wow.
This little kid is awesome, right? And best friends with Boston. You know, they're playing with their superhero toys, and, you know, this one kid has a Superman toy, and Boston has, like, a Spider-Man toy, and this kid's like, my guy's stronger than your guy, and Boston, my son, we do live in Boston, I know that gets confusing, but Boston, my son, is like, no, this guy's stronger, and then the other kid from upstairs goes, no, Superman is the strongest. And Boston goes, God's the strongest.
Mm.
And I was like, all right, here we go. Let's see what happens now. And the other kid goes, what's God? And Boston goes, you don't know what God is? He goes, no, what's God? He goes, oh, God's awesome. He made all of us. He made everything. He made anything that you can see. He's that strong. He's that powerful. And he goes, oh, interesting. All right. He goes, where's God? And he's like, Boston goes, God's in heaven. But he had a son. And his son came here and was walking the streets like me and you. And he goes, but then the son died. But now the son is alive again. And instead of living on the streets and walking around, he lives in my heart.
Mm.
And the kid was like, hold up. How does a person live in your heart?
Right.
And he's like, well, he kind of lives in heaven with God, but he also lives in my heart, and he's really awesome, and you can talk to him, and you can, like, close your eyes and pray to him, but God's the strongest. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, I'm doing something right.
Well
right?
done,
like, you're doing something right.
Well
but, like,
done.
I think that those types of things, you know, like, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I could, like, pat myself on the back, like, oh, good job, Dad, like, but that wasn't me. Like, that was God using an opportunity of, like, a kid who, you know, has an open mind and an open heart to be like, hey, you know what? I can use superhero play to introduce someone else to God. Like, and that was really cool. So, you know, I think just watching that and consistently understanding the input that we as parents give to our kids
yes.
is absorbed, whether you like it or not, and you are going to input things into your child that are going to do something bad to them at some point, right? Like, you're going to have them have therapy for something, because we all need therapy.
Yes.
And let's make it something that's not super bad.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I think let's not mess up too bad, and let's continue to pour the love and light into our children and let them experience God. Because if they can do that, and they know that, oh man, mom and dad are just acting like crazy right now, I can close my eyes and I can talk to that dude who's living in my heart.
Yeah. What's the line? More is taught than caught, I believe is the line.
Yep.
I mean, that's
more watching, is caught than taught.
Or caught than taught. Yep. And it's when you watch, when they're, you know, he's watching you, and that moment is a setup for him, without even realizing it, to be able to, even at 5 years old, evangelize a little yep. bit and yep. share his faith. So pretty cool stuff, Mark. Hey, yep. thanks, man. Thanks for doing this interview. IJM.org is the website. Thanks for being a part of a great organization with them. And we'll be watching you this weekend doing some football games for ACC Network and ESPN. Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And many thanks to Mark Herzlich for returning to Sports Spectrum. It's always great when we can sit down and have a chat in person. And the work that he's doing with IJM is so important. Go to IJM.org to learn more about that, IJM.org. And then, of course, if you're watching college football on a Saturday, most likely on the ACC Network, you will see Mark Herzlich calling a football game. And, of course, we appreciate Mark for sharing his journey and his story with us, particularly that story at the White House with the president. That was awesome. Playing pickleball at Fenway Park. Also awesome. Great stuff there from Mark Herzlich here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. And we appreciate you as well for tuning in to today's show. We always want to just thank you for supporting this podcast and supporting the ministry of Sports Spectrum. If you're interested in partnering with us, if you're interested in having us come and share at an event, if you're interested in advertising with us, you can reach us directly. My email address, jason@sportsspectrum.com, jason@sportsspectrum.com. I'd love to hear from you. And then, of course, check out our website for all the resources and articles and stories and devotionals that you are looking for, sportsspectrum.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time for another edition here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. We love y'all. Hope you have a great rest of your day.